Today is a very powerful day. In the words of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Yesh es ha'efsharus lehis'alos beruchnius. A person could climb in ruchnius and spirituality, but Tisha B'Av no less, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, than on Yom Kippur. We're all sitting here on the floor, close to the floor, with one goal: to grow. How do we grow today? By allowing ourselves a rare opportunity not to do, not to learn, not to be careful with mitzvos, but to do nothing more than to feel, to grieve. 2 weeks ago, my son and I were learning in a Beis Medrash in Ramot in Yerushalayim. And we were there around 1 p.m., right when the kollel that we were using their Beis Medrash had their lunch break. And we're sitting there learning Gemar Makis that my son was learning this year. And all of a sudden, during the lunch break, a fellow with a long white beard sits down in front of us, slips off his shoes, sits on a stool, and starts swaying back and forth. My son Moshe turns to me and says, "Abbas, he's sitting Shiva. What is he doing?" I should have responded, "Yes. He is sitting Shiva. We're all sitting Shiva. The past three weeks we've been sitting Shiva. Sitting Shiva for the Beis HaMikdash, for the Shechina, and most of all, we've been sitting Shiva for ourselves." But instead of answering that answer, which probably would have needed a little bit of thought to be able to respond, I explained to him what Tikkun Chatzos is. Is Tikkun Chatzos could be said a Chatzos HaLaila, Chatzos HaYom. I want to just open with a story that I heard from my beloved colleague, the Rav of the Young Israel of Lawrence Cedarhurst, Yaakov Trump. There's a fellow walking down the street and he noticed some city employees working on a side of the sidewalk. And he paused to watch them because they were doing something very unusual. One of the employees wearing New York City or any other city insignia on his shirt was digging up a hole, spent a few minutes digging it up, sweated, perspired, and sat down. Right when he finished digging the hole, his partner took the pile of dirt and put it right back into the hole. Sweated, perspired, and then they went a bit further down the block, and they repeated this. And further down the block, repeated a third time. Finally, this fellow's watching his taxpayer dollars go down the drain. He approaches them and says, "Gentlemen, I have no idea what you're doing. Can you please explain why you're digging holes and then plugging up those same holes?" And the fellow responds, "Well, you see, there are usually three of us. There's me, there's Frank, there's Johnny. My job is to dig the hole. Frank puts the tree inside the hole. And Johnny fills the hole with dirt afterwards so the plant could grow. It happens to be that Frank called in sick today. So I figured, why should me and Johnny miss a day's work, have to clock in that we can't earn our daily salary? So me and Johnny, we figured we do our job. I'll take out the dirt, Johnny will put in the dirt. It's unfortunate, Frank's not here to put the tree in the between." For the past 3 weeks, we were very careful. We didn't eat meat. Very careful, we didn't shave. We didn't have any simchas to go to. Everybody's so careful, sitting on the floor. You know what it's like? If that's where our avelus ends, it's like digging up the dirt and putting the dirt right back in. We're missing the point. The point is not abstaining from flesh for 3 weeks with the exception of a Shabbos, of a week and a 2 days, with the exception of a Shabbos and a siyum or two. The point is not having to take quick showers. That's not the point. The point is to be able to feel something. The point is to be able to reach the goal, which is all of our goals this morning, to be able to drop a tear, to cry a little bit, to generate a little bit of emotion. We just use these externalities as tools, as vehicles, to reach that goal of being able to shed a tear. And if we haven't been able to do so until now, this morning is the time to do so. is a frightening Meiri, the very, very end of Tainus. Meiri highlights this point that I'm saying, and he says that somebody who is misabel all the halachos of the Avelus of Ben HaMitzarim, as we all were, and keeps all the halachos of Tisha B'Av, as we all are, but he does it derech mitzvah milumada, by rote, without investing thought and emotion. Ve'enu, I'm reading the words of the Meiri, ve'enu ma'orer es libo, he doesn't arouse his heart, his abel al Yushalayim. Frightening last three words. Eino roa bisimchasa. Such a person will not have the fortune to enjoy the simcha of the rebuilding of Yushalayim. That schar that we all yearn for, pray for, dream of, for the past 2,000 years, is held for those who are able to be not just practiced with their bodies, their hands, their arms, their feet, the rules of Avelus, but are able to feel with their heart the pain of the Avelus. In Kinach Av Beis, we're going to say, the Kinach about that was written about the Crusades, we're going to say that on Tishma we have to have a mispeid chadash, a new hespid. I saw from Yeruchim Alshim a very simple question. Why is it that we have to have a new mispeid every year, a new hespid every year? After all, on Purim, we read the same Megillah every year. On Pesach, we read the same Haggadah every year. Why on Tisha B'Av, let's read the same Kinas every year? Let's read the same Kinas that were written 1,000 years ago and just leave it as it is and just read them just like we do on Purim and on Pesach. I want to offer an answer or two. Actually two answers which are really one. Clearly, the point today is not just to talk about the Beis HaMikdash. Yes, the Beis HaMikdash is the locus. The Beis HaMikdash is the axle from which all the spokes of all the tragedies emanate from. The Galus all comes from. The Churban HaBayis, all the Shalom Bayis issues, all the illnesses, all the confusion that we have, the Nachas that we wish we had from our children, the assimilation, all of our enemies, all has one source. Allah Yiddish Tzaris come from Churban HaBayis, Rabbi Asher Weiss used to say, still says. And therefore, if that's the case, then all the new terrorist attacks, the new Chil Hashems in the media, the new divorces, the new arguments between brothers and sisters, all the new diagnoses that Chaman Litzlan, they all come from one source. And therefore, every year, there's more things to be maspid over. Therefore, there's a need to be a mispeid chadash, as we'll say in that kina. But I think it's a touch more than that. Soloveitchik points out that it's not that we're being maspid for all the new things that occur to us, but as we say, b'chol dar v'dar omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu, and equally, we say the same words, kol dar. Kol dar shlo nivna beis hamikdash biyamav kilu nechrav biyamav. We're not crying over a beis hamikdash that was destroyed 1,949 years ago. We're crying over a beis hamikdash that was destroyed today because it's our responsibility and our fault that it hasn't been rebuilt. Kadosh Baruch Hu left us. That's really what we're crying about. We're not crying about sticks and stones that burnt to the ground and that were toppled over. Stones you can still see in the southern excavations. They haven't been touched in the past 1,949 years. Knocked off the top of Har HaBayis is still sitting as they fell. Go to the south side of the base of the Kotel. That's not what we're crying about. We're crying about the Shekhinah that left us, that left Har HaBayis, the Shekhinah that left us, the premius of each and every one of us inside of us, that little empty void that we feel, that constant sense of loneliness, a constant sense of sadness that tugs at our hearts always because we don't have that connection that we could and should and did. We're going to start with Kina Shavas. Kina Shavas, written the first 15 or so kinas, of which we'll say a short, small handful, only about two or three, were all written by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, incredible, incredible Paitan. Question whether he was a Tana, whether he lived later than the Tanaim. And each paragraph in Kina Shavas, in number 6, Vav, has 6 lines, one for each letter of the Aleph Beis. Eicha is also written in the Aleph Beis. Each line of the Kina refers to a different pasuk in Eicha. And Shavas tells you how everything just stopped. Shabbos, Shavas, everything, when the Chuban happened, there was just absolute disbelief, shock. When a person finds something, hears some terrible news, is the first, there's no anger, there's no pain yet, there's just absolute shock, and person crumbles and doesn't believe. That's our reaction to the Beis HaMikdash. And this Kina sort of opens talking about Churban Bayis Sheni, and then the middle talks about, we'll point out in a moment, switches to Bayis Rishon, and you see that it's not really talking about a specific Avelis, it's talking about all Mishing Arayin, mixing together all the different Churbanos that we've experienced. I want to point your eyes to Pei, the third paragraph. Al Pnei Fras, Nuptzucha Sideha. Referring to a Chazal, referring to Psukim. Pasuk says, Al Naharaz Bavel Shom Yashamru V'gam Bachin V'zachreinu Es Tzion Eich Nashi Yashia Hashem Al Adonas M'Nechar. That when Klal Yisrael were exiled by Nebuchadnezzar and Golus Bayis Rishon, he took us to Bavel and we had to cross the river Pras. And there we sat, we cried, and the Levim said, how can we sing the song of Tzion? I want to share with you a medrash that you know the first half, but I want to share with you the second half also. The first half that you might be familiar with is that when they got to that river, when they got to Nahar Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar and his men sat down to have a feast. I'm just reading you the medrash, just sort of translating it with my eyes as I'm saying it to you. And we sat down, lebecha yulamispe, crying and saying hespedim over the churban that we just experienced. We were just thrown out of our lands, some with their families, without their families. Families were killed. And Nebuchadnezzar says to us, why are you sitting and crying? And he says to them, you know what I want you to do? I want all the Levim among you to play your kinoros that you used to play so beautifully at the Beis HaMikdash while I feast. And they looked at one another. And the Levim said to themselves, Lo dayenu, it's not enough that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of our Averis, but now we should use those same kinoros, those same harps, those same guitars in front of this midget. Apparently Nebuchadnezzar might have been short, the midget seems to indicate. And therefore they took their kinoros, their harps, their guitars, they hung them on the Aravos, right there on the river. That's where Arvei Nachal, that's where willow trees grow. And they decided that they would take their mouths and with all of their might bite off their thumbs. And without a thumb, without a finger, they wouldn't be able to play their guitars, their harps for Nebuchadnezzar. And the Medrash says, that's why it says, doesn't say, we won't sing Shir Hashem, rather, Eich Nashir, they responded to the Nebuchadnezzar. It's not that we won't play for you, but that we can't. Our fingers are bitten off, or we're missing a finger. Imagine what it means to take your own mouth and bite off your own finger. That you might have heard. 70 late years later, the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt. Koresh, in anticipation of giving permission to the Jewish people to go rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, sends a message to the Jewish people in Bavel and says, I give you permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And the Pasuk in Ezra says, in describing Ezra and Nehemiah took Bnei Yisrael back from Bavel to rebuild, to Yerushalayim again, to attempt to rebuild the second commonwealth, the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Pasuk in Ezra says that they started going on the way, and they reached a certain point at which they gathered themselves up to figure out who's here and who's not here. Are we ready to go forth and continue to take the rest of the trek to approach Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? You want to know what the Pasuk says? An incredible Pasuk concludes the Medrash. The Pasuk in Ezra says that as they got closer, they realized that they didn't have Levim to do avod in the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine that. A chutzpah. Here we are, people are going back to build the Beis HaMikdash, and the Levim themselves, the people are going to work there, aren't coming? Says the Medrash, no. You don't understand. Levim were there. Levim were there. The Levim who had been exiled 70 years earlier, 68 years earlier, were there. The old Levim were there. The ones who still knew how to play those songs from the Beis HaMikdash, and to sing those songs and to play those tunes in the Beis HaMikdash. But they weren't able to go back to the Beis HaMikdash to play those songs because they didn't have a finger 68 years later. That's why the Pasuk in Ezra says that they realized they don't have any Levium. They had Levium, but they had fingerless Levium. How are you going to have the shear in the Beis HaMikdash if you don't have shear? I'm wondering if this has a message to all of us, because there's shear in the Beis HaMikdash, but we have another shear, an even greater shear. We have a shear that applies not just to those who are fortunate to be Mizera Levi, but every last one of us has a shear. Kisvu lechem es hashira hazos. We have our shear, we have the shear of the Torah. And as we just read in the Haftorah 3 minutes ago, Yirmiyahu HaNavi wonders aloud, how could it be that this terrible misfortune will fall to Klal Yisrael, the Golas, the destruction, Almeh Avda Haaretz. And the pasuk that we just read in the Haftorah responds, Vayomer Hashem. Hashem responds to Yirmiyahu's question, Al Ozem Es Torasi, Asher Nasati Lifneihem, Lo Shomu B'Koli, Lo Holchuba. And of course the Gemara Nedarim asks, what do you mean? What does Yirmiyahu mean when he says, when he asks Hashem, what is it that caused the destruction? Yirmiyahu asked, I asked all the people, I asked all the Nevi'im, I asked all the Chacham, and nobody was able to answer me. If it's so clear that we weren't keeping the Torah, then it's obvious that we weren't keeping the Torah. Why does Yirmiyahu say, I wasn't able to figure out the answer, I wasn't able to find out the answer? And of course the Gemara responds, Hashem responds, not just that they didn't keep the Torah, but says the Gemara in Dharma, Asher lo berchu b'Torah t'chila, they didn't recite Birchas HaTorah. And that famous Ran, it says, what does it mean that they didn't recite Birchas HaTorah? Because they didn't recite Birchas HaTorah, they had to be wiped out. They had to be thrown out of their homeland. They had to be destroyed. They had to be mutilated because they didn't recite Birchas HaTorah. So the Ran, of course, explains. Of course, they were learning Torah. But if you don't recite a brach on something, it shows that you're not machshev it. It wasn't chashev to them. The words of the Ran, Lo haisa haTorah chashuva beinehem kol kach, shehei roi levarich aleha. And therefore, they were mezalza in the bracha. It wasn't important to them. Yeah, they learned. They went through all the motions. But it didn't strike a chord deep, deep, deep in their hearts in a way that would make it worthy to warrant a bracha. The Alshich describes very strong and an incredible story what this event and why it happened. The following mashal, king had an advisor, somebody who was very close to the king, who was had an incredible musician who played beautiful music, and whenever that advisor or that assistant or that person in the king's palace would play music, it just brought the king incredible joy. But this advisor wasn't a perfect character. One day he did some kind of aveira, and they reported it to the king, and the king said, okay, I'll take care of it, and he did absolutely nothing. And a little while later, another officer notified the king that this fellow, this advisor, did something else which was inappropriate, and the king said, okay, I'll take care of it, and did absolutely nothing. And this happened time and time and time again. And then at one point, this advisor again had some issues, got into a fight, and a sword fight or something like that, and he lost a finger, lost a hand. And of course, he wasn't able to continue playing. And, okay, that happened. The next time, there was a complaint lodged to the king about this advisor, that he did something or some misdemeanor, whatever it was, that he wasn't nice to others. The king said, okay, off with his head. Kill this guy. And the musician comes to him and saying, your honor, your majesty, I don't understand. So many times you looked away. What I did just now was no worse. It was much less than whatever I've done previously. And previously you pardoned me every time. How come now you're putting me to death? And the king answered very simply, because while you did all those things that were I was unhappy with you about, but you gave me so much joy with the music that you brought to my ears, I couldn't bear to lose you. But if you're not playing the music for me anyway, what do I need you for? Says the Al-Sheikh, Klal Yisrael did a lot of things over Churban Bayis Rishon, Churban Bayis Sheni. We did a lot of things that deserve to be destroyed. But you know what? When we're learning Torah, we're playing music, that music rings so beautifully in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ears, kivyachol. He can't bear to push us away. He can't bear to do anything to us in a way that we might lose. He might lose hearing, kivyachol, that music, that beautiful song of Torah that he hears. Once we're not learning Torah, once there's no Shira, forget it. We're gone. That's how the Al-Sheikh understands. And so, we begin Shavas, not just with a hesped on what was, a hesped on that inside of us which is not Machshev Torah as we should, but perhaps with a renewed commitment to realize that to the extent that we're able to charge ourselves with a renewed commitment to Torah and to Chashivas HaTorah, that might be able to bring us one step further from the Churban and closer to our goal. Shavas. Shavas Rumeni. Kina Zayin, Rebbe Elazar HaKalir writes a beautiful Kina, also using the letters of the Aleph Beis. It starts straight, Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet. Each line is another letter of the Aleph Beis. And it's set up like a number of the kinos as a foil, a literary foil, meaning there's a contrast. The first line of each paragraph says, how could you do this terrible thing to us? And the second line of each paragraph says, V'lo zachartan, why didn't you remember this or that from our previous relationship? And that contrast of, look what you're doing to us now, and what we had something so beautiful, sort of draws to mind, and I think that's what Rebbe Elazar HaKalir is trying to convey. Fellow, two spouses are fighting, and one says, you know, I'm leaving, and starts packing their bags, and the other one, who doesn't want their spouse to leave, says, why are you so angry? Don't you remember our first date, where we went such and such, and we had this great conversation? And why are you screaming at me? Don't you remember the Yichud Room when we were together? And why you tried to hurt me so much? Don't you remember that honeymoon that we went on? And why are you doing this and that to me? Don't you remember all the other wonderful things that we did together? Let's go through a few of these lines together. The first line, Echa Asta Ba'Pecha, how could you try to destroy us? Lo Zachartu Bris Ben Abisarim, don't you remember our Bris Ben Abisarim? Next one, Asher Ga'arta, Echo Ga'arta, how come you're screaming at us? V'lo Zacharta, D'liga Estil G'dara, don't you remember how we jumped after you with our D'golim in the Midbar? Echo Hagda Behegyonech, how come you again screamed at us? And you don't remember that which we would viud Vesek Ves, that we would gather together in the Mishkan to serve you, to come together for Yamim Tovim? Echa zanachta, how come you're leaving us in the dust, bezamech, in your anger? Lo zacharta chiton chukei chorev, you don't remember our wedding at Hasinai? One after another, how could you be so angry at us? Don't you remember all the wonderful times that we had together? What's the answer to these questions? You know what? This kina does not offer any answers. This kina leaves the questions as questions. Because when the pain is so raw, we can't even attempt to arrive at any answers. The last kina was Shavas, just utter shock, and just we just fall down and can't do anything. Shavas! And here in this kina, we're just saying, but how could it be? How could it be? It's just the disbelief, another stage of almost in the like a denial of what's happening. How could I don't understand? Where is this coming from? And there's absolutely no attempt to try to even be matzdik din. That's going to come later. Here we just ask questions, unanswered questions. That's what Eicha is all about. How could it be? And so we say, Eicha atzda v'apecha. Eicha atzda v'apecha. L'abed v'yadad amin hadonecha. Kina Yud Aleph, which is the most important, most authentic Kina in a certain sense. Also written Rabbi Reb Lazar Kalir, talks about not the Beis HaMikdash, not Klal Yisrael, one person, Melech Yoshiyahu. You have the art school, you could read the story. I'll summarize it quickly. Eretz Yisrael is sort of in a crossroads of different kingdoms. Syria was on the northwest and northeast, and Egypt is on the southwest, and in between is Eretz Yisrael is the cross between those great kingdoms. And that becomes important for in a moment, but Yoshiyahu lived in a time, he became king after his grandfather Menashe introduced Avodah Zarah in incredible passion into Klal Yisrael. And all of Klal Yisrael was doing Avodah Zarah, and Menashe got rid of all the Sifrei Torah. And as crazy as it seems, the Pesukim say explicitly that Yoshiyahu, for the first 18 years of his Malchus, had never seen a Sefer Torah. It's hard to imagine that a Melech Yisrael, at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, never saw a Sefer Torah for 18 years. That's how fanatical the Avodah Zarah frenzy of his family, of his forebears were. And at some point in a Sefer Torah is discovered while they were doing some repairs in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Beis HaMikdash, and they bring it to Yoshiyahu, and it happened to be opened up to the Tochacha, and he said, "What's written in this book that you found?" And it says, "Arur asher lo yakum istivri ha-Torah hazos la-sos ha-sam," curses somebody who doesn't uphold what's written here. And Yoshiyahu hears that incredible line from the Tochacha, and he says, "Aleinu l'hakim, we're going to do it. We're going to do it like Bob the Builder. We could do it. We're going to do it." And therefore he passes governmental edicts, legislation, that everybody has to start keeping mitzvahs. Everybody has to start doing what it says in the Torah. Becomes the biggest Baal Tshuva movement in world history. And he turns around Klal Yisrael. In a few short years, he turns Klal Yisrael around from being entirely steeped in Avodah Zarah to be incredibly dedicated to Torah, to mitzvahs. And he thought, of course, that he had succeeded entirely. He didn't realize that there were still people who weren't as convinced as he was. And they used to play a game. He had messengers, as the Kina describes. He had messengers to go into every house and to uproot, as the Pesukim obligate us, as a Chiyuv D'Oraisa, to destroy any Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. And they had a very creative way of faking those governmental servants, and they would put Avodah Zarah on the back of their doors that would swing open, and two double doors that would swing open. They'd put half of the Avodah Zarah on one door, half the Avodah Zarah on the other door, as it would swing open for the officers to come and inspect the houses to make sure there's no Avodah Zarah. The doors would swing open and against the wall. Half of it would be against one wall, half against the other wall, so you couldn't see the Avodah Zarah that was built into the doors. That's what it says in letter Dalet, Asher Kamach Rei Delos Lisdor. That was the trick of the late Sani Hadar to fool the officers. And so Yoshiyahu thought that we were in a time of Hashem's promise in the Torah of Chever lo Tavor Ba'etzachem, that Hashem promises us that if there's no Avodah Zarah, there's not going to be Cherev Tavor Ba'etzachem. And the Lashon of Chever lo Tavor Ba'etzachem indicates not only is there not going to be fighting, but you're not even going to have other nations cross through you in order to fight. And therefore, when once there was a battle, nothing to do with Klal Yisrael, nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael, just between Syria on the northwest and Egypt on the southeast. I'm sorry, Egypt on the Syria on the northeast and Syria on the southwest, Syria on the northwest and Egypt on the southeast. And Paro Necho from Egypt wanted to go up to battle Syria, And he asked Yoshio permission to go through Eretz Yisrael, and Yoshio was so convinced of the havtacha of Chever lo tavar ba'etzlechem, we don't have to be worried about any cherev traveling through us, and therefore he says no. And the Navi tried to tell him, my dear Yoshio, my dear Melch Yoshio, Hashem tells me, b'nevuah, that you have great intentions, and you've worked and accomplished great accomplishments in Klal Yisrael, but you didn't do the whole job. There still is Avodah Zarah. We're not yet worthy of Cherev Lo Tavor Ba'etzlechem. You better let him through, because we're not yet worthy to that bracha of Ashur of Hashem promising us that we're not going to have. They're not going to fight us. Just let them through. Let them do their thing. They'll pass through us and go up. That's what Hashem wants. And Yoshio is so convinced that he's right. He's so convinced with his religious fervence that he wasn't able to listen to the Navi tell him what Hashem was really telling him. As it says in the Chaf and the Lamed, Lo shamala chozeh lo shuv acharayim. He didn't listen to the Navi tell him to turn back, to hold back. And therefore, with his incredible fervor, he decided to wage battle because he's so convinced that Hashem is on his side, and ultimately he was killed by the archers of Mitzrayim. As it says, in the letter Tzadi, they made him into the target of their arrows. They pierced his body with 300 arrows. And after that happened, Yoshio, who really was a great person, he just, I guess, didn't listen to the Navi when he should have. He realized, as it says in the letter Reish, towards the end, three quarters of the way in, Ruach Svasav Hivtza Mipiyu, as he died, the breath came out of his mouth saying, Tzadiku Hashem. It was my mistake. Hashem was right. Ki Marisi Fihu, I didn't listen to him. After that, the Navi Yirmiyah wrote a kina about Yoshiyahu. Wrote a kina that paid homage to the fact that he was such an incredible person. He did so much. And even the one thing that he did wrong, he did tshuva as he died. Adichtucha shel nefesh. We realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity to do tshuva until the moment that our souls leave our bodies, which is exactly what Yoshio did. He said those last words on his list were Tzadik Hu Hashem. Ki Morisi Fi, it's my fault. He was misvada on the last, with his last breath. Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim talks about Yirmiyahu saying his hesped for Melech Yoshiyahu, and it says, "Vayetnum lechok al Yisrael." They made it a chok al Yisrael. Rashi explains in Divrei Hayamim, what does it mean that it's a chok al Yisrael? Rashi explains that whenever there's going to be a tsar throughout history, whenever there's going to be bechi and kinas on whatever events that happened, that will happen throughout all of Jewish history. For example, says Rashi on Tisha B'Av, when we read the kinos about those who were killed on the gzeros that happened in our time, Rashi's talking about in my time, in the time of the Crusades. Just like, says Rashi, on Tisha B'Av, when we talk about the kinos, the things, the terrible tragedies that happened in our times, at any point in Jewish history, so too the takana was that Yirmiyahu that established. We have to also mention Yoshiyahu, and include a hesped for Yoshio as we make our own hespedim later on in history. The lesson of this kina might be, in other words, why is it that Yirmiyahu established and the Gedolim, the Nevi'im of that generation, decided that we have to mention Yoshio at every time that we make a sit down and say kinos? Why does Yoshiyahu have to be mentioned? There were great people throughout Jewish history. Why Yoshiyahu, of all people, that we have to have a hesped for Yoshiyahu? And I'm wondering if the Nevi'im wanted to teach us a lesson that sometimes we get very excited, but we're convinced is right, like Yoshiyahu did. Convinced we're right religiously. And we're so convinced we're right that we're not even able to listen to the Rabbanim or the Gedolim. Or in Yoshio's situation, the Nevi'im. I want to share with you a story
that relates to this, Rabbi Chil Spiro has a book, Touched by Their Tears, about stories relating to the kinos, and he includes this story relating to this kina. A very recent story. Young married man walked to speak to Reb Chaim Kanievsky and cried to him for help. His father had been diagnosed with a brain tumor, and doctors gave him little hope. The young man was terrified and asked, is there anything that he could do? Sitting at the desk next to Reb Chaim Kanievsky was the Rosh Hashiv of Merkaz HaTorah, Reb Chaim Kreisworth, Zatzal. He used to come to the shul at times. The Av Beis Din of Antwerp. Reb Kreisworth asked Reb Chaim if he could mention something. Reb Chaim Kanievsky immediately gave him the floor. And Reb Chaim Kreisworth said, I think it would be a wonderful idea for you to get involved in publishing the Sefer, Shaul Meshev, by Reb Natanson. A little bit of a coming from left field. Seemed to be so random, but if Reb Kreisworth suggested it, there must have been a reason. The fellow thanked them for their time. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky and Reb Chaim Kreisworth both gave brachas for the father to have a refuah shleima. When this questioner left the room, Reb Chaim Kanievsky asked Reb Kreisworth, why, of all things, did you tell him that he should print the Shaul Meshev by Reb Natanson? Reb Chaim Kreisworth answered, because I know his father. And I remember his father speaking negatively about this Sefer. I remember his father used to make fun of this Sefer. He didn't like this Sefer. And Chazal say that somebody who speaks negatively about a Talmud Chacham, ain lo refuah l'makaso. There's no cure to his sickness. And therefore, maybe if he does tshuva by investing time and money into beautifying, giving the proper honor to the Sefer, maybe he'll be able to get a refuah. The son did just that. A few months passed, and the father had a complete and total recovery. If you look at the letter Tuf, Tom Kesem Hatov Amzu Bifasham. When Yoshiyahu died, Yirmiyahu wrote the second parak of Eicha about him, Eicha Yuam Zahav. Yirmiyahu was maspid Yoshiyahu with the 22 letters of that parak, and Chazal said because of the 22 letters of that hesped that Yirmiyahu was maspid Yoshiyahu, Hashem delayed the Churban for 22 years. That's the koach of being maspid. That's the koach of kinos. The koach of kinos has the ability to rebuild. When you hear something in the news, last week, you look on Eretz Sheva, it's more than a week. You don't have to wait a week apart to hear things news on Eretz Sheva. You hear of some of your brother, a sister, a kid who's murdered, was stabbed. What's our reaction? Are we able to be maspid? Are we able to feel the pain of somebody suffering? If you hear of a gadol who passes away, do you say, oh, another one we lost? Or is a person able to feel the loss that it is for Klal Yisrael, for Torah, and for each of us individually? To the extent that we're able to feel the loss of others, to that extent, HaKadosh Baruch rebuilds the Beis HaMikdash. That's what Chazal is telling us. The 22 letters that he was maspid delayed the Churban HaBayis for 22 years. If we follow suit and are able to dig ourselves into the kinos right now and whenever we encounter a loss in Klal Yisrael, that equally has the koach to build the Beis HaMikdash earlier and earlier and earlier, which each one of those kinos that we offer, each one of the sighs or cries or tears that we're able to shed for any of the events that we might meet, for any of the tragedies that might occur to Klal Yisrael. Kinu Yud Aleph, Ayikonin Yemiyahu Yoshiyahu. Ayikonin Yemiyahu Yoshiyahu. We're now going to go to Kina 16, Tezayin, on page 226, if you have the art scroll. And this talks about Bayis Sheni, when Titus enters the Beis HaMikdash, talks about the story is told in detail in the Gemara and Gittin. Titus walks into the Beis HaMikdash. Gemara and Gittin says, Me'asa, what did he do? Tafas Zona, he grabs a Zona Biado and he enters the Beis Kodesh Kadoshim, and spreads a Sefer Torah on the floor and commits a Paran and Avera. And the Maharal, in explaining that event, that Chazal, talks about what is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what does it mean to take a Zona, to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The central point of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was, of course, the Aron. The Aron had two things in it, the Luchos HaBris, and Sefer Torah, the Sefer HaBris. In other words, the Aron HaBris is that bris between us and Hashem. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is the place that represents that unique connection that we uniquely have with Hashem. And that's why from that place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where that intimate relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given to us in the Luchos and the Sefer Torah, the Aron HaBris and the Sefer HaBris, that's why atop the Aron were the Kruvim. The Kruvim, one which represents us and the other which represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kivyachol. Those same Kruvim that when we would go up to the Beis HaMikdash for Aliyah L'Regel, the Kohanim would unravel the Parochas and let us peer in from a distance and see the Kruvim hugging each other. And the Kohanim would tell Klal Yisrael, Ru'uchi Baschem Lifnei HaMakom. Look how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. As we'd see the Kruvim hugging. And therefore, what did Titus do? Titus came to the place that represents the deepest, most intimate love connection between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he introduced himself, that pagan, idolatrous Titus introduced himself as if to take away from that intimate bond between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That place that's misugal for Chibur Eloki in the Lashon of the Maharal. And by coming in there with a zona, what it means to say, whether it was a literal zona or not a literal zona, it means that he introduced paganism into that place where there's that unique kesher between us and Hashem. And yes, by bringing a zona, it means that he takes something that is foreign, something that is the opposite of that intimate connection, that intimate love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A zona represents the absolute antithesis of that. And that's what he introduces to replace the love that we have with Hashem. On that same Sefer HaBris, that Sefer Torah that was in the Aron, on that same Sefer HaBris that represents our bris, our love to Hashem, and more so Hashem's love to us, he unravels it and unravels that love and introduces the opposite of that intimate connection that we have with Hashem. And Chazal continue, and as he entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he took his dagger, he took his spear, not al sayef, a spear, but gidra as a parochas, and he poked the parochas, of course, as the Gemara points out, v'nasanes, v'yahadam v'atzpeis, the blood starts spilling out of the parochas itself. And what did Titus think? Titus thought, yes, you know what I did? I accomplished my mission. I killed none other than God himself, kivyachol, k'savar harges atzmo. Titus thought he killed God. He asks the Maharal, what does it mean that he broke through the parochas? A parochas, a partition, what separates between different things, anything that has a geder, that has a hevdel, means that it's separate, that it's special. When you break through it, you make it no different than anything else. That's the ultimate, by taking away a partition, that's the ultimate way of being mevatel whatever kedusha is contained within something. But there's something very deep about this nes of dam babbling out of a fabric parochas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching us an incredible, incredible lesson. HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching us that when you die, I die, kiviyachol. Nietzsche wondered, is God... He didn't wonder. Nietzsche said, God is dead. And their answer is, yes, God is dead. He died with us in that Beis HaMikdash. And he died with us in those shuls that were burnt with all of our grandparents in the Crusades. And he died with us in the Inquisitor's dungeons. And he died with us in the gas chambers when we sang Ani Mamin and we screamed Shema Yisrael. Yes, he did die with us. That's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us. As Titus took his knife and cut into all of our bodies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu let himself also bleed to death, kivayachol. Imo anochi bitzara, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us. When he let that blood drip out, spurt out, from that artery of the parochas. That imo anochi bitzara, when Bnei Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to them where? In a sneh, in a lowly sneh. We're freezing in Siberia. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was freezing with us. We were starving to death in the concentration camps, in the ghettos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was starving to death. All the while with us, all the while with us. Kalni Miroshi, Kalni Miroshi, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that when a Jew has a headache, I'm not talking about anything dramatic, a headache, an arm ache, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Oy vey, my headache, Oy vey, my head hurts, kivayachal. If we only realized that when we encounter a pain, it could be a headache or it could be a lot more than a headache. The pain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kivayachal, the great, great, greatest of the tzaddikim realized that when we lament the tragedies that befall us, the highest levels of tzidkus is to really feel the pain out of ourselves, but as the shechina, the galus hashechina. We're not on a level like that. I'd like to draw your attention to one line here. Bekarka habayis. Where is that line? Bekarka habayis ne'elav hecharitz. Second place. Bekarka habayis ne'elav hecharitz. Where is it? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. On page 228, if you have it, the paragraph in the third paragraph, after the nun, Nashim Kesharu Kiva Aretz, the women screamed out, oh my gosh, he's coming. Bekarka Habayis, on the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, Ne'alav, his shoes, Hecheritz. Hecheritz. What does Hecheritz mean? It means to poke a hole. I want to tell you something. 3 weeks ago, my family was with the group that we take in Eretz Yisrael. We went sifting. Sifting is an archaeological activity in the Kidron Valley, right in East Jerusalem, in an Arab area. My kids remember the sifting. And a number of years ago, the Waqf decided that they want to enlarge an exit area for Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they figured that they're going to remove, I think it was 100 dump trucks worth of dirt from Har Habayis. Now, first of all, that's illegal, but that's, you know, moot. More significantly, when you deal with an archaeological dig, you deal with it with a brush. With a brush. You brush till you get to the next level. Then you take a tiny toothpick to the next level. You don't take bulldozers and dump it into dump trucks. But we understand what their goal was. They wanted to eradicate any vestige of memory that there might have ever been anything Jewish on Har Habayis. They take 100 dump trucks, and from Har Habayis itself, they dump it into the Kidron Valley. So here there's virgin dirt that was never gone through archaeologically, and there's an archaeological activity. You could take your families. We went 3 weeks ago with the group, and we went through the dirt from Har Habayis, and the archaeologists say, okay, we want you to find, and they tell you how to look for the different things that you're supposed to find, how to identify what are pieces of mosaic glass, what are shards of pottery. And everything's broken, of course, but there are little things that you find. You always find a little bit of pottery everywhere. And then if you're lucky, you find little pieces of mosaics that have been from Har Habayis anywhere from 2,500 years ago till, 30 years ago, when they redid the tiles in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And some things were from the Crusaders, from the Mamluks, from the time of, from earlier periods and from Har Habayis. And I'm going to tell you something incredible. One of the things that we have to look for is pieces of metal. Because metal, by definition, means that there was civilization there that did something there. Now, if you find a coin, that's a celebration. We were hoping to find the coin. We didn't find the coin. I think 2-3 years ago, one of the kids in our group found a coin from the time of the Hashmonaim. But the archaeologist showed us a nail that was intact, with a very, very specific shape. It was sort of square, that was bent in a certain way. He says, this is a Roman nail. But this is not a regular Roman nail. This is a Roman nail, a caliga nail. C-A-L-I-G-A. The caliga nail were the nails that the Roman legions, when they conquered the world, had on the bottom of the soles of their feet as they traveled. In fact, the Roman army was called caligae, after these incredible shoes that they wore, these hobnailed boots that had nails coming out, you know, like the soccer shoes have cleats. So they had these nails coming out of the bottom of their sandalim, their boots, their shoes, that were known to strike fear. Because when they would march, when you dig your those nails into earth, it gives you good traction. But when you're marching on rock, there's a sharp bang. And when you have 10,000 Roman legionaries marching together, the sound could be heard from miles away and would strike fear in the enemy miles before the Roman legion would appear there. Could you please look back at the kina? Nashim kisharu, kivaritz, the women cried out. They were terrified as this ruthless one was entering. Bekarka habayis, in the ground of Har Habayis, Na'alav, his boot, Hecharit, stuck into the ground. That nail that we saw just 3 weeks ago coming from where? From Har Habayis. Who knows if that nail that we saw was one of Titus's men who's walking right behind him. And he left that nail, came off his boot, and was left in Har Habayis, maybe in the fighting. He lost his shoe, or some Jew smacked him in the foot, and it fell off. And it's been there for 1,949 years since Titus was there with his men and his caliga boots. If you turn towards the end of the kina, 2:30 in the art scroll, the second paragraph, the kina talks about a story that you might be familiar with, that's also spoken about in the Gemara in Gittin. Atakat Saftavir Sheisla Fados, you were angry at Klal Yisrael, you allowed the opportunity to the Romans to clear out Yiladim, children. Ashein Bahem Komu'um, nothing wrong, innocent children. And you took them, as the last sentence says, V'shilchum Beretz Utz, V'shlosh Sfinos, of three boats of children were sent to Rome. And we know the story that the Gemara in Gittin tells us, that they knew they were going to be taken to Rome for immoral purposes, and therefore they decided that they were going to commit suicide rather than allow themselves to be taken for Gilui Arayos purposes. And they had a conversation among themselves, as the Gemara records, wondering if people who commit suicide, Al Kiddush Hashem, have a chelek in Olam Haba. And one of the children bring a riot from a pasuk. And once they realize that that is the case, they all jump overboard and give up their life rather than violate the averus of Gilui Arayos. Look at the last line. Ubas kol nishma. And when that happens, the baskel is heard, Ura, wake up, Lama Tishan, why are you sleeping? And I wonder, who is that addressing? Are we calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can you let this happen? Innocent children doing nothing, willing to give up their lives to serve you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wake up! Or maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling us, my dear children, can I not make it any more obvious? Uru Yishenu Mishenaschem, V'nirdam Mivtir Demaschem, Kumu, Lavoda Sabore, wake up, serve Hashem. And so we read the account of Titus entering the Beis HaMikdash 1,949 years ago. Zechar, page 226. Zechar Asher Asatza Bifnim.